Okay, Leon, if you could perhaps just give me some background information on when you were born and your a kind of potted history, really, that would be really useful, just of yourself and.
Well, I'm quite ancient. I was born in 1946 and grew up in Yeovil, went to school and hated it. So I left school at 14, just before my 15th birthday, which was legal then. I wanted to work in the forest, so I went to work in Forestry Commission, or at least I tried to work in Forestry Commission, and there was no vacancy, so I was kind of stuck without school and without a job.
Right.
And so I went and worked on a chicken farm and was there a week and got fired because the chickens used to attack me. And the ones that attacked me, I didn't feed, so they stopped laying. So we came to an agreement after the first week that I didn't come back for the second. So I started working in a photography shop,
Okay.
and that's where my interest in images grew. And it was a Dolland and Acheson. It was the days when it was a opticians as well as
Right,
a
yeah.
camera shop. So I worked there and got very interested in photography, joined a camera club. Started doing things like Wallace and Gromit, the plasticine models and things with a friend.
Right.
We were doing that in like the 50s.
Yeah. So that was in the
We should have
50s.
carried on, shouldn't we?
That was in the 50s, yeah.
Yes,
Yeah.
yeah.
Okay.
I don't think anything still exists. But we used to go around doing shows at camera clubs and things like that.
Right.
That's
These were
just
animated shows.
animated
Yeah.
shows, yeah.
Okay.
The usual thing was standing up a tree and somebody throwing an axe and the person would disappear and the axe would be stuck in the tree. Those sort of crazy things. It's good fun. Then I left Dolan's and went on to a proper photographer's, where I joined as a assistant photographer and started doing weddings and babies and portraits and commercial stuff, things like that. Then the big company in the area was Western Helicopters. And they chased up for me. They needed.
So would you say in that sort of training, well, that sort of work line of work, you were kind of learning on the job, so to speak, your visual training, that was a
Yes,
kind of visual training,
it was.
but it was just through having to do that kind of work in that situation. It
Yeah.
wasn't this kind of formal training as such.
No,
No.
not until a little bit later, and I started going to night school
Right, okay.
for photography.
Right, okay.
But you know, the old boys taught me how to look at something to photograph it.
Yeah.
As an artist and photographer, so you want to produce a painting or something of a person, you look at it in a completely different way than you would just glancing at a
Yes,
person.
yes.
So I learned that, I think. That's where that came from.
Yeah.
I did night school at Taunton. So I went on to work for Western Helicopters. Joined. That was quite funny, really, because I joined the public relations department, and I had a job which I had to get in early in the morning, about 5 o'clock, and all the helicopters are going out on tests.
Right.
And you know, when you get an earthquake, you get those pens that do
Yeah.
zigzaggy.
Yeah.
Well, they had those sort of things, but doing light in
Okay.
the aircraft, so they fly around and do all sorts of things. Then they come back at 5 in the evening. Drop the cassettes off that had to be processed and put through ready for 5 in the morning. So all day I had nothing to do. I just worked in the evenings and the mornings. And so instead of sitting around, I went and learned everybody else's job.
Right.
So I was like a one-man band, really, in the
Yeah,
end.
yeah, yeah.
And they
Yeah.
didn't know what else to do with me, so they promoted me, sent me to London. And I worked at the old Fairey Aviation site,
Right.
photographing. Fairey aviation planes as well as helicopters. Did all the shows as well, like the helicopter shows. Had one of the last rides in a Spitfire, last two-seater Spitfire, just by luck. I'd never do it again. I was so silly to do it in the first place. Nearly killed me. Horrible. It's horrible.
Dear.
Didn't enjoy it.
Yeah.
It's all right when it's on the ground.
So, when did things change for you when you, well, basically, I suppose, what the circumstances that led up to your producing your artwork, as you're showing me here?
Well, I hadn't really shown any interest in painting. I'd enjoyed all aspects of paint, or of art, rather. I did a course in Ealing Tech College, right, on three-dimensional design.
Oh, right.
For,
oh,
exhibition,
right,
okay, stands.
Okay.
Because I was working on exhibition stands with the Westerns.
Right.
So the deal, I'd go off and learn how to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I did that for a while, that was nice. And then I got more interested in filming, and I did a filming course at Ealing as well,
right,
night school.
Right.
And I think that was a day release, actually.
Right.
So that was the side I came from photographs.
Right,
filming.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, so I suppose in a sense you've kind of had a kind of visual arts training in a sort of patchy sort of way, but,
yeah,
but mainly around the photographic processes.
That's right.
Yeah, okay. You hadn't actually trained, and you hadn't actually been to art school to learn painting or drawing or anything.
Not at all.
No. Okay. So, but yeah, I remember last time we spoke, you were saying that this set of paintings came out of your as a response to a kind of condition you were in when you were diagnosed with
Parkinson's.
With Parkinson's, yeah.
Yeah.
Can you perhaps tell us a little bit about that then? How when that happened, and when were you diagnosed with Parkinson's, and what happened from there on?
Well, first of all, I was diagnosed with cancer, given 4 years to live.
Right. Okay.
But I was the 12th person in the UK to have this treatment, and it worked beautifully. I'd just been signed off,
right,
so I'm fine, which is good. So I was taking a lot of medication.
And when was this? What year was this?
This is just 5 years ago.
5 years ago, okay.
Or just over five now.
Right.
Signed up. So I was taking medication.
And had you finished the job that you were, the photography job that you were working with?
Oh, yes.
The helicopter,
yeah,
company by then? And
yeah. I was running my own business.
Right.
Which was, digital print and,
okay,
and an art department.
Right.
So I had a couple of artists working for me.
Right.
But they were graphic artists.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, through the medication of the cancer bit, they discovered that I was, that something else wrong with me.
Mm.
But because the strong pills I was taking sort of masked it.
Mm.
So I think by the time I'd never really finished taking one pill, I slid into another one, so I was always taking pills.
Yeah.
So when they discovered I had Parkinson's, they kept changing the medication on me, and so I didn't know what I was going to have from 1 month to the next, really.
Right.
So that's what happened, and they tried me on this new medication, which was really quite strong. But because I wasn't in England, they couldn't really see that it,
right,
was affecting me that badly.
So you're now in the Philippines?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I come and go.
Right.
I got home there as well.
Okay.
And but I was over there for a few months. So I basically started taking this medication and then shipped off to the Philippines and continued with it. And the dosage is three times a day, and I was taking 8 milligrams three times a day. I should have been on 2 milligrams.
Oh dear, right.
So it just blew my head up, really.
Yeah.
I ended up in hospital 3 days where they balanced me out, dried me out, and... So it's through no fault of anybody's, really. It's just the medication said, if you weigh this, you measure this, and da da da, that's what you should be taking.
Mm.
And it was a bit stronger.
Mm.
Because of all the residual stuff that I had before, I think.
Right.
And they found me on the bedroom floor and dragged me off to hospital.
Mm.
So, but before that was when I'd started painting as soon as they found that I was diagnosed with Parkinson's. And the reason for that is I wanted to keep my brain active and my hands.
Yeah.
And I wanted to do something creative. And I still can't paint trees and bluebells.
So this is when you signed up with a kind of therapy course, is that right?
No, they just... One of the guys whose wife has got Parkinson's, yeah, is a retired artist. I don't think he was ever a professional artist, but he's very good at what he does.
Mm-hmm.
And he decided to do a class just to keep people interested.
Right.
And I sort of just went along to that. And it cost £1 for a cup of coffee and £1 for the day or the afternoon. So which I thought was good value. So I started painting then.
Yeah.
And but before that, I'd never really picked up a paintbrush.
Right. But I seem to remember you saying that you found, I think to quote you, you said something, you found that you couldn't, in fact, you discovered you were no good at trees and something, wasn't
blue
it?
Bluebells. Yeah.
Bluebells and trees or something.
That's right.
Yeah. And so there must have been some point at which you began to get, you found that what you were doing was opening up some kind of imaginative territory for you.
Yeah.
And that you were getting quite well, you tell me in your own words what was happening there for you.
Well, I've always been one to make faces. By that I mean, or as we say, if you're sitting in a public toilet, you know, an office building or a school or something, usually the floors are made up of patterns,
yeah,
little dots or squiggles or something. You're sitting there for 5 or 10 minutes, look at the floor, you can always make a face. You see it with folded cloth, you see it in all sorts of, in stones,
yeah,
all sorts of things.
Yeah.
And that's where I began to see my faces. So this actually happened by accident, and the way it happened was, for once I was tidying up my study, which is always in a mess, and I dropped a tube of paint. No, sorry, I dropped something on top of a tube of paint. It had to be burnt sienna, and it split.
Right.
So I grabbed it and chucked it onto a sheet of paper, which happened to be handy. Left it there while I finished what I was doing. Came back and it mostly seeped out. So I thought, oh, it's expensive, I'm not going to chuck it away.
Right.
So I chucked the tube away and spread the paint all over the sheet of paper.
Right.
The reason I did that, because the day before I bought some pastels, and I was going to try and see if I could do anything with pastels. Because then I'd have a nice surface for it. But come the next day, this was in the Philippines, and my study's quite hot. It's got two windows either side. And it had cooked the paper.
Right.
I said, it really, really dried it.
Yeah.
And so I was just going to start on it, but as I picked the paper up, it sort of came to life in my hand as such. I could see shapes where the paint had dried a bit quicker than others.
Yeah.
Where the layer of paint was not even.
Yeah.
So you've got ridges and things like that. So I began to see images.
Yeah.
Actually in the paper itself.
Right.
So that's when I tried to explore and find them.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes sense. Yeah, it makes perfect sense. But then you talked quite particularly about some of the paintings that we looked at last time, and where you began to identify certain kind of connections with historical figures, is that right?
Yes, something like that. Because
you felt a strong sort of transference, a presence from...
Yeah, because I was seeing them.
Yeah.
The medicine made me hallucinate.
Right.
So it started off with sort of small hallucinations, like if I was talking to you, you would be crying fur. Things like that. And that began to get worse and worse until I began to see people more often, and they'd appear in front of me. One time I had people stood around me whispering, and I wanted to try and capture that.
Yeah.
And I didn't know how to do it.
Yeah.
But I had actually started doing these deconstructive painting, if you
did
like.
Did that sensation... I mean, were you aware there were hallucinations for you? And did it frighten you? You obviously very much identified it with what the medication was doing to you. And I mean, that must have been a bit scary, was it?
Well, it was, but it was scarier to stop.
Right.
Because I didn't have my... I was in the middle of the... Well, in the Philippines.
Yeah.
And didn't have all the facilities. And I thought, if I actually stopped taking it, it'd probably do me more harm.
Oh, I see. Stop taking the medication.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then good.
Yeah.
It didn't occur to me just to take half the dose, which would have probably fixed everything.
Yeah.
But I literally just kept going.
Yeah.
And then I passed out and they dragged me off to hospital.
Yeah. So, I mean, you mentioned on one or two of the paintings you showed me, you mentioned about this character Tommy,
Yeah.
the foot soldier.
Yeah, excuse me, just call that.
Yeah.
It's only in one. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know that you were very specific about this character that he's from the First World War and died in 1915.
That's the impressions I got when
Yeah.
I. You have to remember that I didn't tell you that I grew up in a haunted house.
Okay.
I was born in Yeovil in Somerset, and we had. It was a sort of terraced house. It was just off the high street, and it was like basically shaped like that, a little extension like that. So the front part was with the barber shop. My father cut hair, and we go through to the back. We really had one room that went across there, which was lounge, dining room, and kitchen was over there. Well, just here was a cellar door, and it had a latch on it so that it was like that. So you had to do that to open
Yeah,
the door.
yeah.
So there's no way it could blow open,
Yeah.
but the door was always opening.
Right.
My father would laugh, and he used to always say, "Oh, come in, you know." My sister and I used to see the little lady in grey, and she used to sort of walk through the house. But because we grew up seeing it all the time, it was just normal. We never even mentioned it.
Right.
She pushed me down the stairs once, I remember that. But yeah, the old lady was always there. So I've often seen things that I don't mention to people because they think I'm totally mad. But
Yeah.
and probably I am, I don't know. But my sister and I do, we grew up seeing things like this. So the fact that I was hallucinating, see people fairly often, so some of the faces I've seen two or
Yeah.
three times,
Yeah.
didn't really bother me that much because I knew what it was.
So you connected the later hallucinations that you're having on your medication and when you were painting
Yeah.
to some of these earlier experiences of the haunted house.
Yeah, I guess so. I'd never tried to reproduce them. But like some of the faces that I've reproduced, I kind of had a connection to them when I was doing them.
Yeah.
It's like they were, they weren't talking to me like a conversation, but I was getting impressions from them,
Yeah.
who they were or what they
Yeah.
were doing.
Do you feel now, even though you're on your control medication now, do you still live some of those experiences or not? Is that kind of
I don't hallucinate
no.
anymore, certainly, but I can remember them.
Yeah. And does that what how does it feel about when you make paintings now? Do you feel that you still get into a kind of imaginative space, if not a hallucinating space in your
Yes,
mind?
certainly I do, but
That
I'm not that close.
right.
The first ones I was very close to.
Yeah.
There were other ones coming out.
Yeah.
I'm close and I sort of communicate, but not like the beginning.
Okay. Because another character you mentioned to me last time was this. You talked about a character called Brick,
Yeah.
who you identify as a strong, tough leader of men. It's a sort of portrait.
Yeah.
Was that the character with a? It looks almost like a pirate
He's got a
with a
patch,
patch on.
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
He's not one to be crossed.
Yeah. And then you talked about scenes from World War I and Henry VIII.
Yeah.
There's a kind of nice mix of
That's
completely
right.
different periods of imagery there.
I just don't know what's going to come
Yeah.
through, that's
Yeah.
the trouble.
Yeah.
And some I don't identify with, or at least I couldn't give you a clue who they were or what they were doing. But I've got scenes that seem to come from a stage, so that's quite fun because I don't know whether they're the real characters or the stage characters.
Oh, I see. They're almost like dramas for you,
Yeah.
like performances.
Yes.
Yeah.
One of them, I think I call it Happy Dance, where somebody seems to have won a cup and
Yeah.
they're dancing around with a sword through their head. Well,
Yeah.
the sword is the trick that he won the cup for,
Right.
so it's not real.
Yeah.
It's an illusion within an illusion.
Yeah. Okay. Now, the actual process of making the paintings, I mean, something that I remember, you said it actually started when you had an accident with a tube of paint, the burnt umber, and then the way that the sun dried the paper out and it created a certain kind of effect, and you began to see his face is within the painting, and so it's like, so in terms of being an artist and making paintings, for you, it's very important that this kind of the imagination is stimulated by the materials themselves and by the way that they happen to form in the process. Yeah. So you keep open to that possibility.
Yeah, it's the way they communicate to me.
Yeah.
So it could be a shape, it could be an image.
Am I remembering right? Did you say that you actually felt a strong presence, that somebody was actually with you when you're making these paintings?
In the Philippines, yeah.
While you're in the Philippines, because you talked about the house in the Philippines having a kind of ghostly feel, yeah?
It has. The house is quite new. We built it not so long ago. But strangely enough, it was an old house on the place. And they had a room like, you know, maybe in England where they have somebody dies and they lay Auntie Maud out in the front room.
Mm.
And they had a room that they used to do that with. And over the years, different people have been laid out in this room.
Right.
But the house is gone. But exactly where the room was, it's my study now.
Right.
In the new place. Mm. So it has a very strange, strong connection.
Yeah.
But also my mother-in-law and one of my brother-in-laws died in that room.
Right.
And when I go into that room, my brother-in-law is usually there. And he's one for jokes all the time.
Right. So you feel he's there when you're
I feel him. He pinches me and strokes my arm. And
really? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that scary or...
Not for me, because I'm sort of used to it.
Yeah. So you're quite accepting of this kind of spirit connection.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not something to be frightened of for you.
No, not at all.
Yeah. And do you feel that kind of sensation of being communicated to in some way or other by a spirit world is important to you in creatively in terms of what you...
I think it did in the beginning.
Yeah.
I did think that the images were not coming from me, they were just coming from somebody who was using my hand.
Right.
And then I decided to calm down a bit and realise that I could see the images in a different place.
Yeah.
So when I came back to England, I could still paint the pictures.
Yeah.
Slightly different way. But I could still do it on my own.
Mm.
I didn't need them to hold my hand.
But it's very important to you, presumably, that without putting words in your mouth, that when you start to make a painting, you've no idea what the painting is going to reveal to you.
I don't at all.
No, and that's quite important to you, because if you pre-plan what you're going to make, you wouldn't be that interested in making the painting.
No.
You want it to come through the process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the reason is because I'm not a very good painter.
Right.
I don't have the skills. I've not been taught or learned the skills.
Yeah, in certain technical ways, I can see what you mean.
Yeah.
But I could argue that there are qualities in your painting that indicate, in some respects, you are a good painter. It's just not the kind of painting that people would usually associate with a skill painting.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got its skills in its own way, perhaps. As far as actual any kind of training is concerned, you haven't had any formal training in terms of art making. The nearest you've got was when you were employed working for photographers and just working with the camera. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was sort of picked up on the job.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And what about knowledge of art in general and art history and other artists?
Books.
Yeah, but you do read books on art, do you?
Yes.
Yeah. So are there artists that you particularly admire? Or not?
There's one artist that I do like. He's very commercial. I've forgotten his name, but he's the painter of light. He does like jigsaws and things like that.
Jigsaws?
Mm. I'm trying to think. His studio is either at Hatfield in the Galleria or at Milton Keynes.
I'm not sure his name.
He's very commercial. I just like the way he's cleverly to underpaint things so that the light sort of shines through it. You can turn the from one light, say an up light like this, to a spotlight, and it changes completely.
Right.
That's just something I admire.
Mm.
I don't really know any artists.
Mm. Mm. Do you visit galleries or?
Yeah, always.
You do. So yeah. You still like looking at pictures then?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So you go to the main galleries and such like, will you? Yeah.
I mean, as I said to you before, I had a party at the weekend in the museum.
Mm.
Well, I went around the galleries. There's two galleries there as well.
Right.
I spent most of the time in the galleries just looking at paintings.
Yeah.
And I keep looking and think, I could do that. I could do that.
Yeah.
But,
okay.
There's an awful lot of stuff that I couldn't do that.
You mentioned at one point that you had a degree in metaphysics.
Yeah.
Which was an American degree.
That's right. I went to Los Angeles.
And when was this?
Oh, gosh.
Roughly.
1970-something.
1970, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you did a... You dropped out eventually, is that right?
It was a two-year doctoral course. And it kind of started getting very heavy for me because I am a Christian.
Right.
I'm not a very good Christian, but I'm a Christian. And there's a lot of stuff that I didn't really agree with.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, I'll just waste my time. It's not going to do me any good having a degree in this anyway. It's not really any good for business or anything.
So if it was a doctoral degree, have you got a first degree then?
I've got a honorary degree.
How did you get
the
that?
The reason I got it was because I dropped out and I went to Cyprus.
Dropped out from where?
Los Angeles.
Yeah, no, but what I mean is that normally a doctoral degree is a advanced research degree.
Yeah.
Normally you would not be enrolled on an advanced research degree unless you got an undergraduate degree and a master's degree.
No, this was a separate course.
Right.
The doctoral degree, they call it.
Right, okay, so...
I'm not quite sure how it all worked.
Right, but you hadn't had any... any higher education after having left school at 15, so you ended up doing this as a mature student. You just enrolled on it.
Yeah.
And you didn't, and they weren't asking for any other prior degrees.
No.
Okay.
Just pay the money.
Yeah. So, would you say that experience on that degree helped in any way?
I learned a lot.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, I went to Cyprus straight after that and lived on my uncle's farm and wrote my thesis.
Right.
That's where they gave me an honorary degree.
Right.
Because I'd actually kind of done the work.
Yeah, okay. But what was the thesis on?
Contrite affirmations.
Sorry?
Contrite affirmations.
Contrite affirmations.
Yeah.
Right.
I can't remember a word of it.
Right, okay.
Which is, I suppose, affirming a negative statement. Think of it that way, right?
Right. So did it involve you reading on negative theology?
Yeah, all sorts of stuff I went through. I mean, they had a fantastic library.
Yeah.
And it was online as well. Mm. It was quite hard to get online in those days. But yeah, got through it. I knew what I wanted to do, what I wanted to say.
Mm.
And it was just, it was fun.
Mm.
But I felt... Tonight, Dave, like dirty.
Really? And this because of you have a Christian upbringing?
Yeah, but I mean, they're not sure. My parents are Baptist, or they're dead now, but they were Baptist.
Mm-hmm.
They're married to a Catholic, so there's a lot of conflicting things in there, as you can imagine. But the way all the different things they were teaching was, I didn't like it. Maybe flesh creep sometimes. I just couldn't do it.
Mm.
So I moved out, gave up my job and pizza place. I went back. Then I went to Australia.
Yeah, you've done quite a bit of travelling then, lived quite a few places.
42 countries.
Really?
Yeah.
And that's usually picking up different jobs and...
Yeah, well, I worked for Western Helicopters.
Oh, yes, of course, yes.
And my first job with them was going up the rivers in Borneo on the hovercraft.
Right.
That was good.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to Australia eventually and worked for Mal Vaughan,
mm-hmm.
who was at that time the top photographer. But I covered the whole of the Far East for him.
Right.
It was good fun.
Mm-hmm.
It was the days when he didn't have mobile phones and, you know,
mm-hmm.
got a telex.
Okay, what are we doing for time? 3/4 of an hour. I think we're probably just about done, really. Is there anything else that you can tell me, or do you feel, is there anything more we can say about the business of the painting at all? I mean, I've got quite a good background. I've dealt with quite a lot about your circumstances and your background and your history.
Well, I've always tried.
What would be probably quite useful if you've got the time would be could pop over to the office and when I've the photographs that I've taken, if there are the titles to any of your work for you, that'd be quite useful to have those with them as well.
Do you want to go through them now?
Well, it's probably easier because I need the actual copy of the images to put the titles into, so that we can relate the title to the to the painting. Because I took photographs of most of your paintings, didn't I? Well, the ones you brought us, anyhow.
Yes, certain ones have been.
It's just stuff up there for now, anyhow, and.